All right, and welcome everybody. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this is Cancel the Cabal. I'm streaming both on Sovereign Internet Radio and my live stream from Truth Broadcast Network. So welcome to Wednesday night. I know we've had a terrible day today. Lost the MSI radio network, but we picked up another network, Sovereign Internet Radio, thanks to UK Prepper. So tonight, I have a very special guest on tonight. She will just be named Anonymous, Anonymous CPS whistleblower. I'm probably just going to call her Miss Anonymous. Maybe I'm hoping that'll be okay. So I don't really have much of a bio for her because she wishes to remain anonymous. But I will let her tell us about her story and explain what she wants to explain. So welcome to the show, Miss Anonymous.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
I'm going to talk tonight about my experiences with the local Department of Child Protective Services and my local courts in Northampton County, Pennsylvania, choose though to keep my name anonymous. I have been watching the court system since I was a juvenile judge's secretary in 2001. Little bit about my background is that since I graduated from high school, largely I have been affiliated with attorneys, working with attorneys. My goal was to be in civil service, human services work for domestic violence. Therapist is what I was planning to be when my daughter started school. I have 12 plus years legal secretarial, being involved in the field of six years in the family courts, family law, 10 years with Department of Justice, Department of Human Services, 2+ years as a juvenile judge's secretary. So I've got some background behind me as to what I've learned and seen of the dismay throughout the years. And even though my background as I have, we mothers unfortunately still get drawn into the system. I was pulled in by a system starting in 2005. My husband attempted my life and he was taken to jail and I was taken to the emergency room of the hospital. And from then on, it was kind of downward. But the system, even at the time, the court system and family courts did not tell me about my husband's hearing. And he was arraigned behind my back, unknown to me, and put through accelerated rehabilitative program. And everything was dismissed before I had even known about it. And when I went to get the records, it was gone. It was like my life and the evidence had just been disposed of like it never existed. And then in 2007, after 2 years of him being on probation, he was in the home, but it was largely platonic. We were finally getting our time to be together, and he disappeared from our home December 24th, Christmas Eve of 2007, and that started my saga into the family court system. After almost 7 months of him being disappeared, he showed up living out of state in New Jersey. My children were just devastated. Their father just walked out the door on them on Christmas Eve. No words why. He came to then attempt my son's life, or detail plot to take my son's life in 2008, 10 months after he left. And coming up on that, I finally filed for custody in front of the master. I could wait no longer and concern for my children. So I went in front of a master and we did papers where I had the full physical custody of the children, and he had 2 hours of visitation. I continued to plead with him to go get help. He has an incarceration history, a mental health history, an addiction history, and then I was forced to get an active protection from abuse order against him. After he attempted my life in 2005, he tried other ways to run me down in holding me prisoner basically in the home and refusing to do anything, dumping all of his responsibilities on me, sometimes not working, my trying to make ends meet, to the stress of it and the physical overwhelm drove me to vitamin D deficiency condition, which is some signs of a seasonal affect, but it was vertigo and constant body pain and stress. And it took them 2 years to figure out what was wrong with me. And then Child Protective Services in 2008 came to step in with my coworker being a coach in my children's league of football. And there was a rain game. He had my son, my 10-year-old son, in tears. And the Child Protective Service worker knew, his name is Mr. Silfies, with Northampton County Child Protective Services, knew very well, professionally, astutely, he couldn't involve in our family matters because he knew us in the community and children's sports. My husband continued to inflict his abuse on the children. And 8 months later, I was forced to file contempt charges against the restraining order, which I had against my husband on behalf of the children. At the point of time I did that, Child Protective Services, the Jeff Silfies, showed up at my house, stalking me, seemingly, as he knew. I had taken 3 hours sick leave from our workplace, where we were also co-workers, and from that day on, we have subpoenaed documents that display Child Protective Service was involved through the records of the system, to which I was never informed. I had no idea. What Child Protective Services does is a process called psychosima and dirty tricks. And I now have the evidence documents proving that we were a part of that vindict. I am, from that day on, there are writings from as many as 20 of my coworkers. I was mortified to find. And I have the proof of everything that I am saying. The man continued to inflict on me, and 8 months later, our case suspiciously was in court. From July 2009, when the Child Protective Services worker showed up at my house, I had to go to court with my husband on contempt. And then I asked a man at my workplace from Department of Human Services, whose name is Dr. Carl Catino, allegedly a psychologist, but forensic psychologists inform that he's not actually a psychologist. My workplace employer, EAP, employee assistance provider. I took my children to his office. He said that he could see them for 6 visits and that he could help me with a workplace, hostile environment type of situation to try to be able to use my leave time. My employer wouldn't leave me off. So So Dr. Carl Catino wrote me family medical leave papers so I could bring my children to him and to try to help me in the workplace in getting my leave time. His concerns were of Child Protective Services and what they had done, I explained to him, and my husband's background. Child Protective Services was made aware that my husband has a background of incarceration, mental health, addiction, and the maximum protection from abuse order, period, that Pennsylvania will allow. Mortified to me, after my children's 6 visits, I received insurance notices of claims that the workplace employee assistance provider had my husband in his office while he had my children at the end in his office. I have notes that were court-ordered from a judge displaying that my own employer, DHS, Department of Human Services, CPS, had my husband in his office and was discussing my children and me, which is in violation of the court order and in violation of the protection from abuse order and breach of confidentiality. And from there ensued a custody case in custody court in front of a judge, which there's nothing on any docket entries to display, no due process. No one asked for the hearing, and the processes needed to go to custody court are not on the court's scheduling. There was no hearing. However, I was asked to meet with my attorney February 17th, 2010, came just an attorney-client meeting, and was brought to the courtroom in front of a judge. I had dropped in my lap proceedings, formal proceedings of custody court, done behind my back without my knowledge. Child Protective Services, the very next time, was asked to do a walkthrough of my house. It actually was the intake department of the Department of Human Services, the intake and referral. But the man who came out was a conflict of interest to my family and was told he couldn't involve. They also assigned my co-worker, guardian ad litem, Henry Newton, onto the case, which to my understanding of the rules is an unethical practice and endangered my husband, my children, and I further. The guardian ad litem, the Child Protective Service worker in the ACSA Department of Human Services Book 2, pursued me and pursued my children at their place of school and education, threatening my children, pulling them out of classes, derogating me to my children. All the while, my attorney, who was a guardian ad litem for Child Protective Services, told me there was no Child Protective Services involved. Mortified to me, in the last 6 months, I've got 2 packages that fully evidence and display more than 700 accesses amongst approximately 20 of my Child Protective Services and Department of Human Services co-workers to creating whatever image of my family through the county records of Child Protective Services admissions is what it indicates. But I have no idea what they say. No one ever came to me. No one ever spoke to me. And my children, I walked into court one day and they were gone, taken from me and given to my abuser husband, their abuser father. And a lack of due process and a displayed, numerous attorneys have said, abuse of powers. The Child Protective Service worker from Pennsylvania, according to my children, was across the state lines and going out of state, affiliating with my husband in a displayed conspiring, and my husband's housemate, who was banned by two judges and a master, that she, the housemate of my husband, who my husband lives with, could not have any contact with my children. Those orders stand to date, never changed, but the Child Protective Service worker was continuing to basically stalk and derogate me to my children and hang out with my husband out of state. The guardian ad litem on the case for the child's custody has displayed a number of times coming into the courtroom representing as my husband's attorney for the large part in a displayed clear conflict of interest. And Child Protective Service Department of Human Services Employee Assistance Program provider who I confided my children in 2009 to is displayed to have gone behind my back in violation of a protection from abuse order, endangering me in the further acts from my husband in what the evaluator was telling my husband about my communications. That evaluator was speaking, he informed me, to guardian ad litem Henry Newton, to Child Protective Service worker Jeffrey Silfie. In an all-clear collusion and a falsification of records and fraudulent acts to endanger my three minor children. As my children were then whistleblowing, and I had to whistleblow to support them, Pennsylvania being one of the 11 or so states left of every person must report abuse. I had to report the intake worker, as Jeff Sophies was an intake worker, dual-rolled, but came here as an intake. My attorney clarified there was no Child Protective Service involved at any time. No letter, no phone call, no visit was made to me by Child Protective Service. The workplace employer evaluator was assigned by the judge in secret proceedings held behind my back. There was never any hearings or trial factually in my custody case. The evaluator claimed to the court and Child Protective Services and the guardian ad litem, I took and completed a psychological test for him. I had confronted a judge over the summer and requested records of the evaluator proving that the evaluator falsified his claims. In fact, I never completed any psychological evaluation. 2 months after the evaluator claimed it existed, he then created test results, but there is no data entry sheet ever completed by me for a psychological test. At the very same time, he created the psychological evaluation as an affiliate of my employer, Child Protective Services and Department of Human Services, showing the clear collusion and conspiring. He wrote me more family leave papers so I could take leave time on a work-related basis with the full display of his conflict. 3 days after, he wrote a psychological evaluation in my name. However, he never met with me alone. He then turned to creating back billings, claiming he treated me in an all display of false allegations and false writings, which are evidenced by many other evaluators and professionals to be fraudulent. I have astutely and responsibly had my attorney through the last 4 years keep me up to date with psychological evaluations. All 9 evaluators clarify that I have no mental health diagnoses, but in my case, the guardian ad litem continues to claim otherwise. The guardian ad litem has been displayed hanging out with my husband, also hanging out with my Child Protective Service co-worker. My husband's attorney was displayed involved in it also. Finally, a year ago, I was able to get payment proof through the State Office of Open Records. Immediately when I got those records, my husband's lawyer left the case, who was Attorney Blake Rush, and the judge, Kimberly McFadden, quickly left the case. Now, I can mention these individuals' names as custody files are public. You would locate them all in the file. However, it's been made clear to me that even my custody file, public file, may not even be viewed by attorneys without the permission of a judge prior. And it has been told to me that there are split files that are switched out depending who comes to look at the file, and an alleged contempt order in the file that's not factual, that vilifies me throughout the entire society and turns the society against the mothers. This is an example of what happens in these cases when Child Protective Services gets involved. Even the courts and the judges do not have any jurisdiction over Child Protective Services. Child Protective Services is their own entity. So that's a little bit of my story, and there are lists out of the process that Child Protective Services does is called psychosima, and they will get you any way that they can. There's a process that took effect, I believe it was 1996, where Clinton initiated adoption initiatives and mass funding available to a father's rights group. How they get that money, for the most part, is through Child Protective Services, Department of Human Services. To get that money, an attorney has to sign off for the funds. This is where the guardian ad litem comes into play, where the judge assigns a guardian ad litem. And that's basically how the funding is pulled, and the social worker writes applications through Department of Human Services. We were stalked. We were harassed. There are 700 accesses into my family's concocted records that I did not even know was in Department of Human Services to take my children from me, and our whistleblowing on Child Protective Services and their affiliates, I am certain in my heart is why my children were taken from me. Although I have every evaluator back-to-back, constant, insured by my attorney, no mental health diagnoses, Child Protective Services claims otherwise, and the judge has every order alleging that I have serious mental health.
You know, I have to ask a question. I guess the first question is, why aren't abuse cases, normally, if someone gets raped or assaulted, it doesn't matter if it's their husband or wife or someone they don't even know. That would be put directly into criminal court. Do you have any idea why these cases always seem to go into the family court and not criminal court?
In adult cases, if it was the adult, it would go into criminal courts. In the case of children, social workers and attorneys and guardian ad litem, they are not trained in domestic violence. And child custody cases that end up in family court, the ones that end up going to court are those where the parents don't have a means of resolving themselves, typically because one parent, sometimes both, are abusive. Now, every cat is not black, so it's not always the father who's the abuser. However, it's very rare, and Barry Goldstein is a good example, writer and researcher, that displays that very rarely is it ever that a male is assaulted or killed by a female. It is almost always that the male is bigger and stronger than the female, and the female is the victim. And the same with children, is the male takes that overpowering, controlling side when the woman wants to leave the relationship and tries to talk to the man. As in my case, my husband was going awry with his behavior. Our oldest was Asperger's. So they tend to not want to believe the mothers. Attorneys are trained not to believe the mothers and to believe that mothers are liars. And the court system, judges lack training, and guardian ad litems and attorneys lack training in domestic violence, which is rape, assault, or all acts of domestic violence. There's no training, no adequate training through those professionals. And this is a large part of the problem that we're trying to change, is domestic violence training is absolutely necessary. It's very lacking. The second that a mother claims that there was abuse, be it emotional or verbal abuse, they don't want to believe. They lack investigation. Child Protective Services is mostly made up of just social workers. They're not actually licensed therapists, and they lack the training. They many times don't investigate. And an example is, as of this week, Arizona Child Protective Services has been abolished, and a new program being put into place where cases are under-investigated, cases are never investigated, and Child Protective Services will, from within, block things, and it can depend very much on the funding and connections. So many times in rape cases, people don't want to report because they're afraid or they've been threatened. And it's a very sad system where people are afraid to come out. Rapes can be very hard to prove, and they tend to want to disbelieve children also and think that their mother turned them against them. And so in those cases of rape, they can be rape, molestation, the children are given over to the fathers in over 70% of those cases, where we have to find a better means for these children to speak out. Unfortunately, some of these can be very hard. Documenting, this is what we say to the country, is documenting what has happened. For those mothers or even the fathers sometimes that are abused, fathers are embarrassed and men are embarrassed to come out and say that their wife or their female companion has gotten the better of them. If a man has been raped by a female, and it has happened, they're few and far between, it's embarrassing to come out and reveal that. When too much time goes by, it's not timely reported, it makes their credibility diminished. That's the problem with rape and those type of assaults. Is the victim's Crime Victims Council and those type of things, many areas, as our area here in Pennsylvania, we don't have what are actually domestic violence help groups where victims can go in part immediately. Even going into the shelters can be tied to the courts. You give your name, your address, you're put into a system when you go into the shelters. So it's being very careful of things. And that's the hard part with rape and assault, is reporting it right away and being of integrity, speaking out. It's very hard for the kids to report it because they're embarrassed. Children have been sworn to secrecy to not speak about it. Wives are afraid they will have no place to live. Their kids will be taken from them. It's those fears that make it hard in rape and assault. With the children and involved in the children, in adults, if it's mom and dad adults, it is the criminal. And with the children, it goes through Child Protective Services largely. And there's so much funding out there that comes from, a large of the funding comes from what's called birth funds. When a child is born, there's a mass amount of money that's put into the state that the state gets each time a child is born. And if you look at the birth certificates, if any mothers, fathers have looked at the birth certificates, always on the birth certificate, if a couple is married, the child will have the father's last name, the father's name is listed, the father's last name. However, you will find that the mother's last name is always her maiden name. The trigger on the birth certificates is that last name is kind of like a tracker, where if their birth funds are used up through the system and the attorneys, through being on welfare, through being on disability, they can even be used, as to my understanding, through unemployment, then they track the birth certificate, being the mother's maiden name, back to when the mother was born. If the mother's mom had any money coming into child custody, they can use those funds, and drawing all those funds can be pulled in to a $1 trillion cottage industry that the family courts are using. We have had Divorce Court movie just released on January 10th. We have another movie being released coming out in February that is The Kids for Cash. Pennsylvania, where I am, is the very state where the Kids for Cash scandal was. We are second only to New Jersey in the United States for these family court corruption cases. We have had the Kids for Cash in Luzerne County in 2008, and we have had 2010, the Penn State scandal, sex abuse scandal. What's going on in our country requires much checks and balances. The sovereign immunity has got to go. We need judicial oversight and reform, and that is what we are fighting for. My children, I sent in pictures of my children, were happy, very well taken care of in my care, but Child Protective Services stepped in behind my back, mortified. I only learned 3 months ago, 700 accesses roughly into my family's records. However, we had no Child Protective Services involved in my family, to my knowledge. There are admissions that have been sent to me at my request. I've gotten a few things that indicate in 2005 there was some sort of allegation, but I knew nothing. It's a week after that when my husband threatened to kill me and attempted to kill me. So therein lies a clear problem of Department of Human Services, Child Protective Services, not coming to both parents, if they came at all, and suspecting that my husband made false allegations to Child Protective Services. So it's hard for Child Protective Services sometimes with all the false allegations. They have to pick and choose, but they do go out. However, when you only see one parent and you don't ask the other parent, there's that investigative process that falls through the cracks that Child Protective Service fails to investigate. In my case, they were threatening my children. And my children in 2008 was in tears. My 10-year-old was in tears at the hands of the Child Protective Service worker who was in that capacity at that time, a football league. The coaches of his team had my son in tears at a rain game my son played in when my husband abandoned my son last minute and wouldn't take him. My husband threatened my son that his mom was the problem and his mom had to be responsible for everything, and told my son basically that he didn't mean squat to him and he could go screw himself. And my 10-year-old was so upset. And then he got to the football game where the child protective service worker, co-worker of mine, the coaches made a mockery out of him as what he'd gone through an hour before that with his father and put my son in tears. Is this what a child protective service worker should be resulting in a child that has them in tears and fearing? 8 months later, in July 2009, I took 3 hours off of my workplace with a terrible headache. My social worker or my supervisor didn't want to let me go. I couldn't keep my eyes open with such a terrible headache. Finally, I was allowed to come home. And an hour later, my coworker, Jeff Sophies, familially community known to my family, who had my son in tears in 2008, came to my house. Now, how did he know I had taken 3 hours sick leave from my employer? That displays to me further my employer's hostile treatment of me. Once my family started coming through the courts in a protection order against my husband, and by admissions, there displays that there were reports being made about my family, and I don't know who made them, but what I do know is Child Protective Services can make false allegations from the inside, and they have been known to do that. When they come out to a house, they will tell you that they don't have to tell you who made the report. They're protecting the informant. That gives Child Protective Services the opportunity to create from inside their own allegations and false allegations, what is called a psychosoma process, where no one actually made a report, but they will vilify a family or a parent. It can become very political, depending on who the parent knows. In my case, my coworker was union involved in things. My husband was affiliated with a union organization. And in my case as well, my husband's lady housemate that he lives with is known to a judge lifelong. She comes from a family of police officers and law enforcement. So my case is a political one of political pull. And my husband's attorney was the associate to a former New Jersey judge, James Pfeiffer, and I am all knowing that my husband's attorney, who was holding discussions with Child Protective Services, my husband's attorney was Blake Rush. Mr. Rush's reason for not being at his prior law firm are because of his unprofessional, unethical acts. And in this we question how this attorney then comes to be with a reputable law firm of a former judge, given his prior history. It is well known that he was having discussions with Child Protective Services and giving the display of unethical acts. The evaluator was having discussions with Child Protective Services, and Child Protective Services will make their way to try to speak to anyone and everyone which they're given too much leeway to manipulate, and they have no oversight. You never know if those cases have been evaluated, and in my case, I sent 150 pages about packet and whistleblowing and my concern of my husband's behavior. I sent it personally to the intake department, which is connected to Child Protective Services. And in the file, after I was alerted to some things, all of the documentation and records that display what the Child Protective Service worker was doing, my complaints of him, and my proof of my husband's history that displays he should have never had custody of my children, that packet is not in the file of Child Protective Services. It may have been removed by the Child Protective Service worker, but they can manipulate so much. So keeping documentation is imperative. The Child Protective Service worker started writing the emails. However, my attorney explained to me that that intake was all that the involved was, to do a house walkthrough and come to my house. Only the intake department of Department of Human Services, where complaints come through, was asked to come with a form in child custody and walk through a structure that says how many rooms, how old the place is, what sort of a dwelling, a row home, a high rise, a barn. It's a 10-minute walkthrough. And my attorney made it clear to me there was no Child Protective Service involved. There was just a walkthrough by intake. When my children were taken, the judge suggested that Department of Human Services intake get us a name of a supervised visitation monitor. They put me on supervised visitation, and in my heart, I know that the reason they took my children was because they whistleblew on Child Protective Service worker, the guardian ad litem, and the evaluator, who are all a part of Department of Human Services, very tightly working with the judge. It is very hard for an individual to continue to pay these attorney's fees, and the largest amount of money goes through the family courts, because when children are involved, they close the doors of the courtroom, not letting in the general public, which is a large part of the problem as well. The judges can easily then manipulate cases, falsify records, put slip files even in the custody files. This is all throughout the country what we find is going on. In my case, the clear evidence, 9 evaluators display no mental health. Dr. Carl Catino, through Department of Human Services, knew my family in 2009, saw my kids, a clear conflict of interest, knew my husband's incarceration history, his mental health history, and writes that my husband has no history. We were never entitled to any actual hearings in the courtroom. How it was done was eventually, when they finally put hearings on the list, the judge showed up with a piece of paper. She took the lawyers into chambers, 30 minutes on end, sometimes 45, they would come back out. The judge would take the stand and the attorneys in front of her. My attorney, my husband, and I were kept outside. Once the judge and the attorneys came out from chambers and stood at the bench, we were asked to stand next to our attorneys, wherein the judge read off orders. I was never, ever made aware of any of the discussions that went on in chambers. There are no transcripts because there were never any hearings. There was never any testimony to actually have a trial. No one appeared at the courtroom except for the intake worker from Department of Human Services, who said that my house and my husband's house passed inspection.
Okay.
No one else came into the courtroom to testify.
That's understandable. We're at the first hour here. Anonymous whistleblower, can we go ahead and take a break here?
Sure.
Okay, I've got about a 5.5 minute break set up. If you need to go do something, we'll go ahead and do it.
Okay.
So we'll be right back, everyone. All right, and welcome back, everybody. We're back from the break. So while I got a few seconds here, I'm going to tell everyone that Mike and Kristan are coming up in about 55 minutes. They do something 5 nights a week on Truth Broadcast Network. And they can be caught on one of 5 sites. They can be caught on rundownlive.com. They can be caught on truthbroadcastnetwork.com, cancelthecabal.com. And 2 other sites. I still need to get their names and get them plugged. Corey's site, if I can remember, The Average Liberator. That's what his site is, TheAverageLiberator.com. And I think I need to get Mark's site wrote down so I can plug his site too. But they can be caught anywhere as well as I can. And since it's Wednesday night, Harry might be coming up at 10. And as I mentioned, Corey's coming up at midnight Eastern. So stick around and check them out, everyone. Getting back to my guest, the anonymous CPS whistleblower, I have a question. From earlier, I was just listening and thinking about some things. And I will expand on this single question. I guess the first question is, do I have you back now?
You do.
Okay. I guess I didn't want to ask without you being there, but the federal government alleges, and I say that loosely, they allege that fathers of children have $50 billion of a fund that they can draw from. But you happen to mention the birth certificates and the existing funds from that and all of the bonds, all of the bonding that goes with the birth certificates.
And Father's Initiative funding.
Father's Initiative funding.
That money is all derived out of our income taxes that are taken for federal income taxes,
right,
that eventually make their way down through
That's
federal
illegal.
Funding into the states in Health and Human Services.
Yeah, that in itself is illegal, just from the $50 billion. But you also said earlier that the birth certificates and the funds and the bonds create hundreds of billions, if not $1 trillion, that they can draw from.
Each live birth generates a mass amount of money in birth funds that stays there. If it is not used, that is...
It just accrues, doesn't it?
Accrues and accumulates. And the mother's maiden name, if any of the mothers and families have ever questioned... When a mom and dad are married, baby is born, husband and wife are married, the mother's married. Why the maiden name is used on the birth certificate. And that is a tracker back to her birth certificate where they can search if one person's funds have been exceeded. They look back to the mother of the mother and what money they have left back in there in the funding. And they can just keep pulling from those monies.
All right. I'm sorry. During the break there, I did pick up Jill. So you haven't spoke to Jill yet, have you?
I haven't.
Anonymous.
Jill?
I want you to say hi to Jill. Say hi, Jill.
Hi, Anonymous.
So, Jill, how are you?
Yeah, it's good to have a whistleblower on the show. Thank you so much for coming.
But you've had a little bit of a hectic day and running around yourself.
I have. I've been to court and back and had to swim in the lake all in the last 4 hours. I had to go to court for some parking fines that I hadn't paid and they'd blown out. Anyway, it was really interesting because the lawyer was there and he was saying, a lawyer was talking to a guy next to me. You know, I was there, this total innocent compared to the people who were there, like for some overdue parking fine. And the lawyer saying to the guy, oh, well, look, you know, like the gun, that's a bit of a problem. But the pliers, you just say, tell the judge that you found, this is what the lawyer's advising the guy. The burglary, you know, like, because you're so old, it doesn't really look as though, you know, that doesn't really go in your favor, and you've got all these priors, but the pliers, you know, the pliers, the bolt cutters that you had, you can tell them that they just happened to be there, but coincidentally, you know, that they weren't really meant to be matching with the gun. And I was just listening to it, and I was thinking, the whole thing is just so corrupt. Like, you know, the lawyer's telling this burglarizing thug how to get off. And
okay,
then they
Jill.
All end up... Yeah, sorry, go on, Stephen.
Let's get back to this other rabbit over here.
Mm. All right, so back to your rabbit. So it's completely corrupt.
Yeah.
And I get it. Because I was actually trained in rural social welfare for a couple of years before I gave up the course for the very reason that I thought I was being trained by Child and Family Services were my main mentors. And I thought, who wants to take children away from their parents, which is basically what they're doing. So
it's about the funding. There are different amounts for children under the age of roughly 8 is to $4,000 for adopting out a child, and the adoption incentives that were put in place. And we find it concerning and very conspicuous that effective 96. We had 96, 97, 98, 99 in 2000, and plus to the end of 2013 is where the initiatives fund appeared to end, says through the end of 2013. So that's 5 years, 96 to 2000, 13 years to 2013, marking that 18 years.
Yep.
A child, when you have a baby, birth to adult, how many years is that?
18 to 21.
Do we know a child birth to adult, 18 years?
Mm-hmm.
Those initiatives started in 96 for those 5 years, 96 to 2000, plus 13 years to 2000 is exactly 18 years.
Yep.
And these are some things that we're noticing to the suspicious coincidence of things. But that funding, Child Protective Services can, when they take a child, they don't necessarily have to revoke parental rights. As soon as they can get a child into their care, they can start the child into an adoption process. If they're able to adopt that child out within 15 months, younger children are worth $4,000. Older children above the age of 8, typically roughly 8, are worth like $8,000. They can adopt. Child Protective Services has many times adopts the children out within 15 months of when they have a child, many times without the parental rights being revoked. They're after that money.
That's interesting. And another thing that I was actually thinking about was the way that they're trained. Like at the university, the whole, when I was studying rural, because I live in the country, rural social welfare at a university, I found that you're constantly taught to fit into the system. So the social workers and the social welfare workers and the rural, you know, all these people are trained to fit into the system. You're told how to speak, you know, you've had this training. Would you like to talk about that a bit? Because it's extremely, well, I couldn't fit into the system. I just absolutely, you know, argued with them the whole way through. But all the good little simple kids, you know, the young kids that they get and they train as social workers or rural social welfare workers or welfare workers, talking about duty of care, you have to report this, you have to do that. And then the next thing I thought about was how these people with fairly narrow minds, sit there and observe somebody and project these sort of ideas onto them and demonize them or pathologize them. And so, in fact, we're really let down by the actual training of these workers.
They pathologize, you heard a word there, the pathologizing of parents.
Yes, they pathologize the parent.
And much can depend on the social worker and how much training the social worker has and service workers' demeanor themselves as the outcome that they desire. There are many times children, unfortunately, Child Protective Services doesn't even look into the cases. I have repeatedly known teachers to say they report concerns, school, and things they see where teachers are concerned, and Child Protective Service doesn't even call them back. They don't look into matters. And so it can be very difficult sometimes for them to decipher what cases they do and don't need to look into. However, then there are the very bold cases. In my case, my husband, with his incarceration history, he'd made a number of attempts on my life. His first of his threats came on me 9.5 years ago.
Yes.
August 2004, he came home from work one day, in a disarray of things, I was putting supper on the table and cutting the plates up for the kids. And he said to me that he would just kill my tail. Betsy used a different back word.
Yep.
That I would sit in a corner like a dog, bitch. That I don't deserve, S-H-I-T. And he would get 75% of every effing thing. And from there, he continued to threaten me. He said he wasn't going to do anything for us. And that was a turning point where my son, second son, started first grade, and we wouldn't need daycare for them. So when the daycare for them ended full grade, he started threatening me and my children.
Yes.
And what is displayed from there, an ongoing 9.5 years premeditated sociopathic behavior to excessive pathological lying, to which I've documented it all. Now, I explained to Steve that I have a background since I got out of school working with lawyers. I was 12 years with legal secretaries. I have 10 years between Department of Justice and Department of Human Services. I was a Judy Judge's secretary for a little while. My oldest son is Asperger's, so I had to go through due process with the schools and special education system to get my son his 504, and was regularly in the schools with the principals, guidance counselors of a professional level that I have. Raising an Asperger's child as well is my background. I am an astute individual. I was a Sunday school teacher. community mom here where I am. All the children know that they can come here. Their parents know they're here. Have no problems with me. I'm first volunteer allowed to work in a NICU unit of a hospital of integrity. When there was a shortage, I heard it come through human resources. I worked there and volunteering there and mentioned something, and I was actually allowed to work with the babies in the NICU unit of a hospital as a volunteer, which had never been heard of before because of my integrity. You know, to have come myself one day to walk into court, I didn't even know we were going to court. I thought it was just having an attorney-client meeting. They done proceedings behind my back, formal court proceedings and pleadings that I was never told about. And my children whistle-blew on, I had a coworker who was a child protective service worker. He was involved also in my children's football games and football league. He knew he was conflict of interest. The judge then appointed my guardian ad litem, Henry Newton, co-worker, and brought in all of these people who were literally my co-workers into my own county, which was a conflict of interest, and the dirty trick, and they will do behind your back with my background and a legal secretary in 5 years and 6 years in family court, family law. They did this to me behind my back before I ever even hit a courtroom. Nothing on the docket entries, never being on a hearing list.
They ambushed you.
And my children said, my children were then whistleblowing what the child protective service worker was doing. And there was a PSA against my husband. And
explain what a PSA is.
A protection from abuse order against my husband. Thank you, Steve. A protection from abuse order against my husband, where he had detailed the clear plot to take my 12-year-old Asperger's son's life. Apparently, he had a bad day at work, got laid off, doesn't remember when he started there, and he stalked out my son, told my children that I slept with 70-ish-year-old men. There's been said I'm a stripper, all kinds of things to derogate me by my husband, and he detailed the plot to my son that clearly he was going to do something to me, and my son should keep his mouth shut, or that he would then take my son out, and how he would remove his body from the house, get him into the truck, drive his body and dump him in the middle of nowhere, his body that he had clearly killed. Without now a death certificate, these are my husband's breaks in thought. Without a body, he then told my 12-year-old son he was going to go to the state, get a piece of paper to take to child support, because he didn't want to ever have to pay another dime for them.
What an absolute creep of a man. It is an extraordinary thing. And so with all of this information, which was written down, your 12-year-old son, that was that documented in the PSA, that that was documented and still not taken into account?
No. With that active protection from abuse order, I had called the intake department. I worked for Department of Human Services, Child Protective Services. The end of 2007, December, I transferred out of Child Protective Service directly into the Mental Health Early Intervention Department of Department of Human Services. But we still all worked together, kind of still work together. And I called the intake department and asked them if they could send a lady from Crime Victims Council or someone with me to the Protection from Abuse office, and I obtained a protection from abuse order describing what my husband had said to my son. Now, he has attempted my life He attempted my life in 2005 in August, and he was taken to jail. And the ambulance and the police took me to the emergency room of the hospital. And I have hospital records to prove that. I have my husband's mental health that he was put through. He is a relapse to addiction. So there's mental health, relapse to addiction, his incarceration history, now the active protection from abuse order I issued in the end of 2008. It went all the way to 2012, 3 years being the max Pennsylvania has. In between there and 2010 is when we suddenly were pulled into court, where I thought I was just going to an attorney-client meeting. And it wasn't unusual for us to meet at the courthouse because I didn't want to meet in my workplace, and the attorney was often at the courthouse. And there's conference rooms there. I didn't think anything of meeting my attorney there for a client meeting. However, we were taken into a courtroom, and a judge arrived, and the judge informed that she was giving my husband sole custody of my children that my husband abandoned, disappeared on Christmas Eve, 2007. He just disappeared for 7 months. We didn't know where he was. He didn't care about the kids. He didn't want to pay child support. So I filed then for child support. Without any compliance to any court orders, I'm suddenly brought into a courtroom and told by a judge she's giving my husband sole custody of my children, wherein the last 4 months he didn't even see the kids. He wouldn't return a phone call. His housemate, the lady he lives with, was using his phone to call my house from my husband's cell phone and curse at my children and threaten to, I would go and close the phone because I gave the phone to the kids to speaker. They put all three here. So I had to hang the phone up on the housemate, my husband's housemate, using my husband's phone several times. There's court orders, three court orders, a master and two judges, that ban my husband's housemate. She cannot have any contact with the kids. Once I got confronted by my children saying that Child Protective Services, conflict of interest, football, their football affiliate coach in their football league, our neighboring team, was stalking my children at school, pulling them out of classes. The Child Protective Service worker was telling my children trash about me, according to what the children said to me, and I believe everything they said. My children whistle blew. I'm a Child Protective Service worker. He threatened the children that they could not tell me that he was doing this. And to all my knowledge, always, Child Protective Service can't go into a school unless there's been an accident or a serious issue at the home that they don't want the children walking into, or where someone is not going to be home to receive the children. That's the only time the Child Protective Service can go into a school. If they need to speak to a child, they're to go to the house. But never disrupt a classroom unless it's an emergency. But this guy, with a PFA, Protection from Abuse Order, against my husband, is clearly displayed that he was helping my husband. Went into New Jersey. When we first came into court, the Child Protective Service worker from Northampton County, Pennsylvania, Mr. Silfies, is informed to be by my children, was going into New Jersey, having affiliations with my husband's housemate, whom two judges and a master banned from ever having any contact with my children. My children never met her at the time. I, to this day, have never met the lady formally. I have never spoken to her. However, she has done very vindictive acts to claim I'm a stripper, I'm the evil insane one. She claimed I was counties away in New Jersey at her workplace when things would be coming up in court they didn't like. And my husband wanted to come back home. My husband's housemate would vindict within 24 to 48 hours, starting in spring 2008 and continues to the present day. I have never formally met her and never spoken to her. We had no social...
I've missed the point. Are you talking about the judge in this case? Who haven't you met? Who's the woman you haven't met? Sorry.
The lady my husband lives with, I have never met.
Right.
I've never met her. My children will be with their father 4 years in April. Yet there are two judges and a master. Orders that still stand. There's no order that it ever says that it's okay for her to have contact with my children. Two judges' orders and a master banning. My husband's housemate can't have contact with my children. But they've been living in her house almost 4 years.
Wow. So how do you think that there's two points there. One, why hasn't that been contested? Why haven't you, tried to contest that within the
corruption.
Family court?
Corruption.
I went, as soon as the alleged trial was done, I filed a reconsideration, and I went to the former solicitor of the county, who is an attorney, and asked him for his help. He appeared with me in court to try to reopen, because we never had any hearings. We never actually had any trial, which is a full lack of due process, abuse of powers.
Yes, I'm going to skip back a step further than there. How do you think she, that it made this jump? How do you think they managed to... this jump happened, that the husband who had a restraining order on him all of a sudden ambushed you. What do you think happened there that he got that influence over the court system? How do you think that happened? What happened there?
I believe that the Child Protective Service worker, who was a conflict, who had, at a football game, for my son in 2008, the team, my Child Protective Service co-worker, was president of, and his coaches, had my son in tears and blamed me when my husband abandoned my son to take him to a game. I have three children, and I had my two children with me taking to their game, and my husband was supposed to take the 10-year-old to my Child Protective Service co-workers team game. And last minute he called my son and told my son that he could basically go screw himself, and my son was very upset that his dad didn't care about him. Now he wasn't going to get his sports game, and his two siblings were getting their sports games, and he was crying on the phone. And I assured him that, I said, Austin, you know your mom will not let you down. I promise you football. I said, Mom knew that this might happen. So I made arrangements for my two children to be taken care of by other parents and to bring them home. They had a cell phone. They had a key. My oldest was 13. And I came and took my 10-year-old to the Child Protective Service workers' game. 8 months later, the Child Protective Service worker showed up at my house when I took 3 hours sick leave from work. I had a major headache. I'm where I'm supposed to be, of integrity, always. My son came in the house, the 10-year-old, who was in tears by the Child Protective Service worker in the capacity as a football coach the year before. It now has my 10-year-old son in tears again at my house where he knows he's a conflict. So when I came to the door, when my son made me understand that the big guy, I said, that's all you need to know about him. I said, don't bother his name. I work with him. I said, the big guy is the team we're playing today, and they knew him as the big guy.
Yep.
He came to my house, and he knew he was a conflict. So I went out the door, and I explained to him that he knows he cannot involve in my family private matters in any way, shape, or form. He knows us through football, the whole family, and the community, and that I would not speak to him by any means on a child protective service level or through our employment to which we both work at Department of Human Services.
Ah, so it sounds like he got a vendetta against you. That guy there was where the one who abused the power.
The child protective service worker. And the day he came to my house, I told him that I was going to speak to our union steward at the workplace. And from there on, there was a subpoena done for records out of Child Protective Services because they retaliated to terminate me from my job because, in my heart, I know it's because I whistleblew and the children whistleblew in retaliation.
Now,
because
can I address some things, Jill?
Pardon?
Can I address some things?
Yes, please do.
I've got some comments in the chat room, Anonymous. One happens to be, let's not forget parents accused only have 1.5 years to prove their innocence. I thought maybe you might address that.
That is correct. I was discussing that they have about 15 months window to adopt out a child. They can adopt out a child in 15 months, not ever having to terminate the parent's rights, that the parent has approximately 15 months to prove their innocence. They can have the child adopted out that quickly without even terminating the parental rights.
Yes. And another comment is, there is no monetary incentive for these CPS workers or these groups. These people is what the actual, these folks, to put children back in their homes, to put kids back in the home.
Absolutely not. The funding that they pull from is much the adoption initiative to adopt them out and the father's rights funding.
That's a very important point.
Well, another comment is, if the agency does reunify the kids with the parents, they get only the first batch of funds. That's another comment. Do you understand what that is?
I don't know what the first batch of funds means.
I guess I'm not sure either.
What they still do, no matter what, is they harass the families. Through supervised visitation and any way they can manage to, if you were to Google the dirty tricks, there are 18 scenarios. I think it's something like that, 18 scenarios, DCF, for Department of Children and Families, or CPS. If you Google DCF, or CPS dirty tricks, and you'll see something that says mass outrage under headline DCF, Department of Children and Families, lists these 16 different categories of what Child Protective Services can do to vilify your family.
Yes. I know what the the funds are now. There's actually two more comments here that go right into this. The federal government gives the CPS department over $75,000 for each child they take from the home, plus all costs of housing them in foster facilities, psych treatments, doctor visits, etc. If the parental rights are terminated, then the agency gets the above funds plus another $250,000. That's the second round of funds.
So there you have where the funding comes into. They look for the families. Most often, families who have multiple children, they can make a bigger hit at one time. In my case, I have three children. And if they can involve, mine is a mother and a father, a private.
75,000 times three plus 250,000 times three.
There is up to $150,000 a year in my case.
Okay.
Or possibly more than that for my three children. Now, mine are in the father. They were taken, given to the father. However, I don't know at this point that my children are actually with the father. They will do whatever they can, and it's in the dirty tricks, list of dirty tricks, even in private custody where a family split and they're at a vulnerable stage. If Child Protective Services and the courts, the family courts, give the children to abusers because they claim mothers lie, most of the time the fathers haven't done the parenting, the fathers don't know how to be parents, those children then, once they're with the father, children in youth pull them from the father, and then they end up in foster care. So they take them from the good parent, move them to the abuser, and many times the children ending up in foster care. And I have three children, multiple, where they can get three children at once, or they can get the children from vulnerable parents who are separating in divorce, give the parent children to the abuser, and then they can move the children into the system because the abuser can't take care of them.
Yes, and it's absolutely no stretch to theorize how some of these CPS rings have been brought down in the past, and they've actually found where some of these workers in some of these corrupt agencies make in excess of $500,000-$600,000 a year with all of the children that are being stolen and put into foster care. And you know,
and the judges,
yeah,
the payments come all the way down through. It's the guardian ad litem.
They do, right?
Fighting the guardian ad litem in there, that's the ticket to signing off for the funds and moving the family, and at least some means, into Child Protective Service. And the fathers then are aided by the guardian ad litem. And in my case, witnesses have seen, and even attorneys have watched, the guardian ad litem come into court. Matters not of custody determinations, and represent, the guardian ad litem represents essentially for my husband in the courtroom, not even on a custody determination matter. The guardian ad litem has refused to ever allow my husband to be evaluated. However, he's the advocate for the children. He doesn't have any say in whether or not my husband's evaluated, but my husband's history is known to the evaluator, and they are covering that up. You pay enough money, they will cover it.
It's really interesting. So if they were to change the funding for there to be more money in reunification, then there would be a change in reunification by the look of things.
Our frustration is some of the funding doesn't so much have as much to do with it as ensuring if the money went directly to providers, it should be seen as checks and balances, the money going directly to a therapist for reasonable fees for reunification or for family therapy. The funding put into the Fathers Initiative and to train fathers to be fathers, training them to be good parents, there's no integrity in verifying what the money is being used for. It should go directly to providers. It's being used to pay kickbacks to judges. It's been used to pay off evaluators. In my case, I'm an insider, worked for the Department of Human Services myself, and have masses of proof that the evaluator was my coworker, affiliate, Department of Human Services, employee assistance provider. He knew my family and had done work-related papers. Yeah, for leave papers so I could take leave because they weren't letting me use my leave time on an employer-related. And then he was appointed under custody. There's a mass display of conflicts of interest where that evaluator and my workplace EAP had the protection from abuse order, incarceration records, mental health records, addiction records of my husband. And an attest that was provided to me displays the extreme concern of my husband's mental health status. The evaluator wrote, "My husband has no history."
There's a couple of other comments I'd like to get out there too. This same listener, watcher, says these folks do put false memories into the kids as well. As far as, you know, trying to structure up a case against one parent or the other. And they also do go into schools and talk to kids without letting parents know, so long as the principal allows it.
And that's where our schools need to be more careful, is there needs to be those provisions need to stay in place. There is no reason for a child protective service worker to go into a school. That child has a home. If they're in foster care, those CPS workers go to the foster care all the time. If they're in a mother or father's care, they have to go to the home and talk to the child. Right. There's no reason to be disrupting the classroom where you're disrupting other children as well. And it's intimidating a child, it threatens a child, and it's going behind a parent's back. They display to the children no disrespect or no respect for a parent. And our biggest concerns when they put them all in foster care is not just funding, but brainwashing the children, turning them against their parents, and the masses of psychotropic medications that every child is placed on.
Really?
Because there's much government money in those psychotropic medications. And government is government is government.
And that keeps bringing it back to this enormous lack of clarity that seems to be functioning everywhere. It seems like there's a whole lot of addle-headed people here with a lack of clarity. Like the guy who decided to take a personal vendetta on you because he didn't like you, and then ambush you and sort of then set it up to sort of punish you. That's just so much personal bullying. It's just personal war that somebody, and, you know, really sort of delicate egos. And this is why we need so much more training. I point again and again to the importance of improving the training of these people, because there's something wrong with their training.
And they're predators. The guy was this man, I call him a predator. He preyed on bullying my children, whatever he knew of the finances he was going to get out of it, and that's been wrapped up clearly in my case.
Yes.
I got some payment information a year ago. It made my husband's lawyer quickly ran off the case, and within 24 hours, the judge ran off the case. But this child protective service worker acted as a predator. He had my son in tears in 2008, and then when he came to my house here in 2009. And then all of a sudden in 2010, our case comes into court, and I've just received records that this worker who knew he couldn't have anything to do with my family, he never spoke to me on the basis of a child protective service worker, and my attorney made it clear. He was intake to do a walkthrough of the house, and then intake was supposed to give the name of a supervision agency. That's it. This guy then started writing me emails claiming of my mental health, and he said that all of my allegations about my husband were false. They were all in my head, and that I should get back into my mental health treatment. However, to cover myself, my attorneys kept me going. Back to back, without any breaks, I wanted to cover myself 9 professional health evaluators. All declare I have no mental health diagnoses. However, the CPS, who's just a social worker, is writing that I'm mental and about my mental health issues. And the judge, then, Child Protective Service worker speaks to the judge. The judge has every order in my family court case indicating that I have serious mental health. However, all of the evaluators write me no mental. The judge wanted me to go to 2 of her people. While I went to the judge's 2 people, I continued going to my people. The first evaluator the judge assigned was my employer, DAP, who knew my family the year before, and who said my husband's history, he clearly had proof of, didn't exist. There's clear falsification through all the documentation of that man. Then the judge assigned another one of my workplace affiliates, who I knew, psychologist, who is basically, she's a domestic violence adult serious offender, and sent me to see her one time, and she's displayed to have falsified the records and said, though the court order asked my husband's records to be assessed, she wasn't doing it. I was told that the judge instructed her not to comply with the court order to get any of my husband's information because they don't want it revealed. And my kids told me what the Child Protective Service worker did to them. Then they told me what the guardian ad litem was doing to them. And they were also writing what the evaluator did to them. My kids whistle blew on everybody. And that ticked the courts off.
That's effective.
In my heart, I feel 99% certain that that's why they took my kids, so they couldn't talk and to retaliate against me.
That's effectively why you lost your job, why your abusive husband, your ex-husband, has your children.
Yes, all aided.
Okay. I did mention to you, I do have a video show. If you would like to somehow get me some of that documentation, I can run it at a later date as a follow-up.
I'm willing to give you evidence, because evidence is evidence. I brought it all legally. We can discuss how I can get that to you. I've been left in a means of complete penniless poverty. Not just in poverty, but complete penniless.
Destitute.
But I'm interested in providing my evidence to you. I have nothing to hide, and that would be fine by me.
Okay.
But it's mortifying. Children have not I don't know if they're alive, for 3.5 years.
How are your kids? Do you get to see them much?
I haven't never heard from them for 3.5 years.
Haven't?
I basically, essentially, uh-huh. I don't necessarily know that they are alive. My oldest would be 18 now, but we are certain he's been told that if he contacts me, he will not be able to have contact with his other two siblings. We're certain he's being threatened. And it's mortifying. Just Christmas Eve, my husband walked out the door as I was preparing for Disney World, and now we could move on with our lives because my daughter was turning 5, Dakota was 12, and daycare wasn't needed anymore. And Disney World before my other son turned 10, now my husband and I would have time for each other. He disappeared. I pressed all that way, and he disappeared on Christmas Eve. And then we come out of nowhere into the courts, what I think is an attorney meeting, to find they held proceedings, private proceedings behind my back, I never knew about, and filed pleadings with nothing on docket entries, never on a hearing list. I was set up before I ever even hit the courtroom. Because my kids whistle blew. And I feel in my heart strongly that that's why they did it. Falsification of the orders means that society, ignorant, doesn't want to believe that the judges will do this. And it's specific to the family courts because there's children and they can get it in children and youth in those closed doors where they exchange all the money. Family, court, and the children. And society is not allowed in those custody courtrooms. The demeanors of judges in family court are very different from an open public courtroom of civil or general litigation.
Did you happen to mention earlier, or maybe it was somebody else in one of the chats, Arizona Governor Richardson did away with the CPS? That was you, wasn't it?
I mentioned the Arizona government has done away with the Child Protective Service.
Yep.
Last week.
No, well,
and she's
okay. Yeah, this is
her own thing because there were more than 6,000 cases that weren't investigated.
Yep.
And there is masses of under-investigated, where in my case is a clear example. My husband's history, as I've explained it, was provided. I had to be a whistleblower. I had to report abuse as an employee there, and my own children were being abused. I was in a catch-22. Being an employee there and then bringing in my family, they put me in a catch-22, and I'm in a trapped box. And then they possibly treated me at the workplace. I was terminated, and I'm impossible. I live in fear every time my husband doesn't like something, they retaliate. And when we came into court, he had been laid off, got laid off for a while, is relapsed to addiction. Not interested in working. His unemployment was ending. He was receiving notices to be put in jail from domestic relations. So they walked into the courtroom and claimed that I was mental and the alienation claim. And when you say mental to a judge, they are essentially required to err on the side of caution. And that's what was done to us. And though I know how to file pleadings and what needs to be filed in the family courts, they are fully closed almost always. You have public courts, which is criminal courts all open to the public. Then you have open courts, that's don't include the people off the street, and then in family court, it is fully closed, where it's only you, the father of the child if it's private, the guardian ad litem, or the attorneys, and the judge. And the public doesn't know the manipulation that's gone on. The public watches Judge Brown, Judge Judy. They think you get to testify. I never got to say a word in court. There was no testimony for trial. And so the children were taken bolt of face without hearing for factual trial. Nothing on the docket entries at the beginning. And I filed reconsideration. We filed emergency petitions. Our hearings were pulled off the list, never granted. We've never actually had any hearing. And how far they will go, it's... So I have pleadings filed to go back into court. I don't dare go back into a courtroom myself because it will anger them. And I will be told that I am to pay all of my husband's attorney's fees, is what I have been warned. And don't come back into court until I pay my husband's fees as well, which they know I can't pay. It's all part of the antics. The court don't like custody cases because the parents can't get along. But as I said, 85% of custody cases that come in front of the judge have some sort of abuse or domestic violence. And then there's a small 5% of those cases or whatever that are true serious domestic violence cases, where mine is one of those. My husband has detailed plots to kill me, made attempts to take my life. In different ways is overwhelming physically with the kids to hope something will happen to me, denying me sleep, daring to go to work that maybe I'll get in an accident or I'll get very sick. When he abandoned us on Christmas Eve and abandoned three kids 2007, I was in therapy for two knees, a stress injury at the workplace, temporary injury. I was not to be on my feet. He disappeared on us Christmas Eve when I was not to be on my feet on three children. He doesn't love the kids. He doesn't care about the kids. He did everything that he could to try to make me collapse or to kill me, to get the children so he could take the money, because I told him he had to go back to treatment. He didn't want to go back to treatment. It was clear he relapsed, and when in domestic violence, when the parties separate, the mother says she wants to leave, and they're mostly where the mother wants to leave because the father's abusive, the father takes that control to a different level when the parties separate, and that makes the mother, at the point of separation, that's where the abuse largely comes. And the mother has to file for the protection from abuse order. And society doesn't get that. They say, well, the mother, why is it the mother just comes when the parties separate and complains of abuse? Because that's when the controller takes that step, when she says she wants to be done or the abuser needs help, he vindicts even further. So the mother... now separated, now she has to go for protection because he keeps stalking her or makes attempts on her life after the separation because he wants to control her, he wants to control the children. Those are the true domestic violence cases. And court and child protective services and guardian ad litem are not trained in domestic violence, neither are evaluator psychologists. Very rarely ever, and the only ones that are would be forensics.
Right, and that's a very important point, because as this is a whistleblower conversation, they're the important things, as well as your story, of course. for us to stress, because just sort of analysing the situation, and there is this double-edged sword, or this double sort of prongs to this fork that was stabbed into people. There's probably a few prongs to this pitchfork, and one of them is the lack of training. The other is the personal and that couples with these personal vendettas that the people put into these positions of power, mixing their sort of own personal and private life there with their clients, which is really absolutely staggering. And the other is the money, the lack of, when you're thinking about, if I was to reform the system, what would I do? Would you like to comment on that? If you were to reform the system, whistleblower, what would be the things that you would change? And I imagine that they involve, financial incentives and training, but would you like to talk about that a little bit? What do you see that really needs training? If a miracle happened and everything looked right, how would it look?
I don't believe, as a kind of personal belief and just generally, that the court's purpose is for litigation. Litigation should not include private family matters. I don't think that we should have family courts. I do believe in child support, but our system lacks integrity and checks and balances. There is too much of an ease for corruption. There has to be more checks and balances. There has to be more judicial oversight and a reform if the family courts are to continue, but I believe truly that we should do away with family courts in custody and divorce and family courts. The judges should be required when a family comes in, or in any case, a display that they have tried to resolve the matters through therapy and going to a therapist. If those parties can't come into a judge and say, we've gone to a therapist, here's our proof, here's a report, nobody should be coming before a judge, because judges' time, respectfully, is of the essence. They shouldn't be coming before a judge before they can prove that they have tried to amicably resolve issues themselves. In the steps before you should even come to a court of just common sense, sometimes in respect of those types of things. With Child Protective Services, again, it is training. And sometimes you can train a person, but common sense as well is agenda. When you first meet with a family, you have to speak to both parents. In my case, I can tell by admissions that were mailed to me for my request, there was apparently some inquiries made that never came to me. Apparently was only made to my husband. That could have caused him not telling me and caused us more issues as well. He didn't tell me that he got a visit from Child Protective Service or whatever was going on, mm-hmm. where you're turning one family member against the other.
Yeah, he got scared.
Social histories, family social histories, mm-hmm. sitting down with the family as a whole, if the system really wants to put families back together, sit the whole family down as a whole, where there was never any social history in my case. They're lacking in their procedures at Child Protective Services.
Okay, I'd just like to make a point here, because there's one person, I think... go on.
Make this the last one here.
Okay.
I do need to wrap up.
It's not a question, it's a point. And that is, when people talk about family systems theory, they don't understand that family systems theory is actually meaning that when you touch one part of a mobile, it affects every part of the family. So what we're really talking about with family systems theory is saying it's important to work on every aspect of the family. And I really agree with that. I know some lawyers don't understand what family systems theory really means, but it means that holistic approach where every aspect of the family is supported and empowered. So I really agree with what you're saying here, whistleblower. Keep going. I just want to make that point strongly.
And we also have to look at the convictions. If we know that there's a pedophile, if we know that the children have been raped, that there's that sexual abuse, in not leaving the children alone with the perpetrator, not placing the children with their abusers.
Yes.
Common sense weighing that, but not ignoring the evidence that's put before us for $1 trillion cottage industry, where as much of these custody cases are, for the psychotropic medications to try to keep kids quiet to put them in foster care, is oversight and reform is imperative.
Right. Yes.
Children, right. They need to be given the feeling of safety to speak out.
Yes.
We tell a child, what are we if we're telling a child they don't have a right to speak? We're taking away their civil rights. We're overbearing on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bringing up a child. That's not in the best interest. In what they call best interest of a child, there needs to be more of a view than looking at the child down one tunnel. It needs to be the best interest of the family as a whole.
Yep. I agree completely, because a child is nothing without their family, and a family is nothing without, well, we are, you know, like, we're interdependent, and that's that, seeing the family as you touch one bit of the mobile and the whole mobile wobbles, and that's why it's important to work on every aspect of the family.
Yeah.
So I...
And then when you expand that to society, is one of the problems in this is a lack of training with the judges and in the court systems, and another part of this messy mobile is the financial incentives. Then we have to change the financial incentives so that the people who are affected by money will run after the money if the money is put into reunification based upon healthy healing of the members of the family.
I think that every visit that Child Protective Service has with the family, the notes from the visit need to be written in the view of the family and signed off. There needs to be integrity. When the caseworker says something on paper, the family needs to be signing off. Caseworkers, like in
right.
my...
What you're saying, when you're saying signing off, is the family needs to say, yes, that is what happened, that is a valid report.
Yes, integrity.
Yes.
That covers the
yes.
caseworker,
yes.
that covers the family, for integrity.
Yeah, so it's not an opinion, it's yes, we agree, this is in fact what happened.
And I feel sorry sometimes for the caseworkers, I do. The families who there is a reason to involve, those caseworkers going out, I have a heart for them that families are angry when Child Protective Service is involved. They're going out there as one caseworker. Their lives are in danger in the families who are truly abusers. So I think that caseworkers should not go one at a time. I think that they should go in teams of two. Then we look at what that's going to take in staff. And time also, because
yeah. I think
we need those social workers to be safe as well, but then for the integrity of the families where there is no issues or involving Child Protective Service in private custody cases, it's over the top. just looking the safety levels for the child protective services as well, because they can walk into situations many times of infestation. They can come down with illnesses. I do feel sorry for them on some routes, but other times where it's not legitimate and the rigging and the endangerment is going on, we've got to stop the endangerment.
Yeah, and I think we also need to stop the monetary incentive also, the personal monetary incentive with the bonuses.
Right, I agree. And training fathers. Okay, so when you send fathers somewhere, you need to send the funding directly to wherever the father is going for training or the mother going for training. It can be the mother who needs the training. Sometimes the fathers can be better. Every cat is not black. But that the money needs to go directly to an agency where it's proven that where all the funding has gone to. Because these psychologists getting kicked back, in my case, I didn't pay an evaluator. The judge assigned the evaluator, said we were supposed to pay. I didn't pay that first evaluator a dime. That evaluator, he never even met with me alone. He literally claimed I took a psych test. 2 months later, created one in my name. It indicates I have a criminal history. Go out and look me up. And Stephen knows my real name. I am no such thing. Indicates I have a mental health history. I just told you I had 9 evaluators straight. No mental health. And Blue Cross all the way back to 2003. I've never had any mental health treatment. However, the judge has her orders written. I'm serious mental. Claims I have a drug and alcohol problem. Ask my family and my husband even said in court, I don't drink. The falsities. 3 days later, he writes me more work papers, as he was my workplace provider, doing work matters for me, involved in a custody case. 3 days after he writes the work papers, he creates a psychological evaluation. 1.5 pages, which they're always at least 10, because he never even met with me alone. Literally created a psych test that he never even met with me alone. Never showed up in the courtroom. The evaluators never showed up in the courtroom, and the judge used their writings. That's not admissible. In just the clearly corrupt, unethical, illegal acts. That it's got to stop. There has to be oversight. Custody courtrooms, they need to be open to the grandparents, the aunts and uncles, the babysitters, the church families they grew up with.
Yes.
That mother and father are going through a hard time in that courtroom. These are their children, what they created. They need the community known to them in that courtroom. When a judge closes the courtroom, that should draw a flag to everybody that there's something they're hiding. And they use the children and saying they can seal the cases, seal the money is being requested through Child Protective Services and welfare that public never sees, and society is too arrogant. We need to train society as well, because they don't want to think it happens. And it's, I don't know if my children are alive for 3.5 years. I don't know if I will ever see their faces again. Almost 15 years I raised them. Christmas Eve, I think we're going to Disney World the next year, and my husband just disappears, and 2 years later, my kids. I put them on the bus in the morning with hugs, kisses, I love yous. Walk into a courtroom, my lawyer said he can't get anything more than 4 hours a week of visitation, and the judge handed him my kids. Now, imagine a 7-year-old, 11 and 14, had gone through enough over the last couple of years in the back and forth of dysfunction in their life. They're now met, if you're 7, 11, 14, after school by a stranger who tells you You can't ever live with your mommy again or go back home. Imagine being a 7, 11, 14-year-old, told that, out of nowhere. You went to school in the morning like any typical day, and now you can't go back home or ever live with your mother again.
Yes. Well, I do need to wrap this up now. I have another guest coming on.
That is so sad. And you've been absolutely marvelous, whistleblower, and you've come up with some fabulous ideas of the financial incentives being reversed and the people agreeing with what has happened and the evidence being transparent and not having family courts in camera. They should be public. They say that they're doing them for the sake of protecting the child, but in fact, it's incredible child abuse. They should be transparent to a lot of people. You know, they don't have to be transparent to the entire public, but they should be transparent to everybody involved.
The devastation of being a victim of that kind of an abuser, who I've questioned now since he's been doing this since 2004. It's 9.5 years of premeditated acts and falsities, clear perjuries on the witness stand in the court. I have clear evidence that displays he's lying. I was never allowed to testify. He says mental, and that's done me in. And to work also for human services, I devoted my life to, about families, and I started the program for juvies tired of watching them stand in line and commit suicide when my son was a year old, and have a judge now make these allegations of me and take my children and retaliate against me through my workplace, terrorize me there, and take my job, leaving me penniless. So I can't afford a lawyer. I've been thrown in jail twice, first time without a warrant, hours before a custody proceeding, which many lawyers said was to try to stop the custody proceeding. The second time, because I can't pay the support money, they didn't want me out on work release. There were false allegations of mental, which many have agreed that was to keep me there, to try to get me a mental diagnosis, because all the evaluations declare I'm not mental, but the judge has the order saying mental. So if the prison can now try to get something saying I'm mental, they made false allegations, threw me in suicide in jail. I found out afterwards, I heard the prisoners talking, that they were a part of it, apparently. I was let out of the suicide in 6 hours because it was clear the evidence went against the guards at the prison. Now I'm set next month to go to jail again because I can't pay the support. If they threw me in suicide and made those allegations 3 months ago and we proved them wrong, those guards were furious with me. I'm afraid the next month, if I end back up in jail, I've had attorneys say, there's a likelihood possible they will try to kill me. I'm just an innocent mom.
Yes. As are many out there. And you are very, very courageous for wanting to get your story out there. Even though it is an anonymous story. It's not so much anonymous to a lot of people that know things, but it is to the rest of the people that don't need to know. So, as I mentioned, I am going to wrap it up here. If you would like to somehow, either in a PDF file or a Word document, give me some of that documentation, and we can do a follow-up sometime, anonymous.
Okay. But, communicate afterwards as to get that in process.
Yes. I unfortunately do have another guest. Could only be half of an hour to 45 minutes, but I will give you another ring after I get done with this interview here. So we can work out some details that way.
Okay.
All right. I appreciate you coming on and telling your story.
And I thank you for giving me the opportunity, I pray. I live in fear 24/7. Every time they get angry, something happens to me.
Yes.
It's a horrible way to live.
Yes.
So.
And I do have the other papers, the documentation I was referred to you earlier. Somebody went and retrieved that for me, so I'll be able to give that to you a little bit later too.
That's awesome.
About the mortgage and that. So.
Okay.
I will go ahead and put a song on and say goodbye to you during the break, and then I will just call my next guest.
All right. Thank you for finally getting the passwords with you, Jillian, and been great. You could join us. Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Oh, you're welcome. It's Stephen, of course. So
Stephen, be safe, be well, and thank you again.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Have a good evening there. All right, everyone. I'm going to put a quick song on and do a little bit more taping. I'm going to send a message, and we will continue on just for a little bit here. A little bit more taping, not a whole lot, but a little more.